Well, you heard late last week that Israel had taken out the leader of Hamas. What does that mean to this war in the Gaza Strip? What does that mean to Hamas with this war going on? Going forward, their strength, are they more apt maybe for a ceasefire now or some resolution? Kind enough to join me this morning, he is the director of the Michael J. Morrill Center for Intelligence and Security Studies with the Department of Political Science at the University of Akron, a wonderful friend of mine and ours, Dr. Carl Kaltenthaler, with the University of Akron on board with us. And Carl, when you saw the leader of Hamas being taken out last week, your initial thoughts that you put together?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Ray. It's always a pleasure. So, you know, to be honest, my first thought was, oh, once again, Israeli intelligence finds a high-value leader of one of these groups that they're fighting, and they took him out. And then I read more closely the information that came out, and they just ran into this guy on the street and got into an exchange of fire with him, not knowing who he was. He ran into a house, and then they destroyed the house with a tank shell, and that was the end of him. So this was a really fortuitous event for the Israelis, because he is an extremely important leader in the Hamas movement, has all kinds of connections to the Iranians. So this guy, he's a very bad actor. He's also probably, if not the most extreme, one of the most extreme people in the Hamas movement. So the Israelis got lucky. This is a good moment for potential peace between Hamas and Israel, so that, you know, things like the hostages can be returned to Israel. Gaza can get some much needed humanitarian supplies. You know, hopefully this will lead to that kind of an outcome.
Sounds
like... I will say, and I don't want to preempt your next question, because this may be what it is.
Yeah.
I'm not super optimistic that will happen.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I was going to go next, Carl, because often with these terrorist groups, they just plug in the next guy in line, and sometimes it can even be worse than we had in leadership before. So, you know, I guess speculate what lies ahead. Talk to us about this organization itself, and do they have a history of plug and play?
So, yeah, they absolutely do, because the Israelis have taken out several Hamas leaders over time. That's definitely part of the Israeli playbook to do what we call decapitation strikes, where they go after the leadership of these groups because it weakens the groups. You know, one of the things that these leaders have is not only expertise, but it's connections. You know, these guys are very well connected to people within the movement, but they're also very well connected to foreign sponsors or other groups that are kind of like-minded. So someone like Sinwar is not that easy to replace, because he's been in the movement for so long. He's been in Hamas since the beginning. He's been in Israeli jails since the early 80s, fighting against Israel. So he's extremely well connected. The big question, though, is who would replace him? Because there are definitely more moderate people within the Hamas leadership, some of them who live in Doha in Qatar, where they've got a kind of sanctuary there, on behalf of the Qatari government. But there are also some really extreme folks who could take over. And one of the people that's being bounced around as a potential replacement is Sinwar's son, who is considered just as extreme as he is.
Well, this is Dr. Carl Kaltenthaler with the University of Akron. Again, he's the director of the Michael J. Morrill Center for Intelligence and Security Studies, and, of course, professor in the political science department there at the University of Akron. Carl, through your research and certainly your connections, talk about now where the strength of Hamas is. You know, the leader, as you mentioned, has been taken out. But where are they? Because obviously they're getting a lot of funding, a lot of support from Iran and other countries. Are they still real strong, or have they waned in the last year and a half of this war?
Well, they've certainly been degraded pretty substantially since the Israelis started operations in Gaza. They've lost more than half of their actual fighting force as a consequence of these battles that have been raging in Gaza. So they've lost a lot of capacity, no question about that. They're not really in a position right now to strike back against Israel in any meaningful way. They're in survival mode. They're really trying to just, you know, get through this until there's a ceasefire or a potential peace deal. That's their hope. You know, they're trying to hold on to the hostages as leverage to get to a ceasefire, because that's what's going to allow them to survive intact. And that's one of the reasons why the Israeli government is so reticent to agree to a ceasefire, because they know that they've got Hamas on the ropes, and they know that if they do this long enough, they'll at least be able to degrade Hamas even more. Destroy Hamas completely, that's probably not realistic, but degrade Hamas to a very high level, yeah, that is realistic.
Carl, when we talk about this situation, there's many people, including me, and I certainly don't have the ties like that you have, but I watch this from outside and said, okay, this thing's gone for over a year. Hamas has been weakened. Why don't they just give their captives back? Israel said that's what they want back, and this whole thing can kind of end. What is holding that side of this story up?
Well, that's a really good question, because you'd think both sides would be exhausted by this. The costs on both sides are very high. But here's part of the equation. Part of it's political. So on the Israeli side, Benjamin Netanyahu doesn't want this war to end. A big reason for that is that he has some very extremist political parties in the coalition that is keeping him in power. And these parties say that if you end the war before you completely destroy Hamas, we're going to pull out of the government. And so if they pull out of the government, that means his coalition falls. He's out of power. One of the very important things to keep in mind about Benjamin Netanyahu is he's been indicted for corruption. If he gets out of power, he's looking at jail time. So he wants to stay in power. He wants to keep these parties happy. And, you know, this is very frustrating to the U.S. government, because they know this is a big part of his calculation, that he is continuing this, you know, maybe not so much to guard the security of Israel, but to keep himself out of some legal peril. On the Palestinian side, when it comes to Hamas, there's also politics, right? If some of the leadership says, okay, we're going to make a deal with Israel, more extremist elements within Hamas may say, no deal with Israel. We're not going to do this. The other thing is, Hamas wants to hold on to the hostages, because the hostages are the only leverage they have against Israel. If they don't have the hostages anymore, there's no leverage. And the Israelis can go after them, you know, until the last man. And Israel has a reputation, rightly earned, for being very, very persistent in going after the people they want to go after. It may take them years, but they will hunt these guys down. So, you know, on both sides, there's actually some good reasons to keep the war going, which is obviously horrible for the people of Gaza.
So, Carl, let's take it to the next step. And you've seen the history in war. You've studied the history of war. Where does this thing go, and where does it end?
Well, that's a very good question, because the day after is what keeps being brought up time and time again in the circles that I move in. That what happens after Israel says, okay, we're done with military operations in Gaza? Do they just pick up and leave, and Gaza somehow tries to figure out how to eke out an existence? And who governs Gaza after the Israelis leave? Because I think the Israelis have made it pretty clear they're not super interested in governing Gaza, but somebody has to, because Gaza could actually turn very dangerous. You know, obviously it's been dangerous to Israel, but it could continue to be dangerous to Israel for a number of reasons. One is, you know, Hamas can reconstitute itself. You have armed gangs that join together, and that's already happening in Gaza, because they're trying to control the humanitarian supplies. You know, just chaos and all that kind of thing on the border of Israel is not a good thing for Israel's security. So the question is, who's going to govern? And there's even talks that the United States may send forces in to help with governance, along with other countries. So there's a good chance it would be an international coalition that would come and govern Gaza. Another potential option is that the Palestinian Authority, which runs the West Bank, comes over and runs Gaza. But that's none of those options are simple, easy, or a magic solution to the problem.
The complexity of this as well, right, Carl, is the United States, with their closest ally is Israel, and we have a huge presidential election in 15 days. Talk mm-hmm. about the rest of the world keeping an eye on that election and what that could possibly mean if there is a turn in events with the United States hierarchy possibly changing.
Well, there's all kinds of governments around the world that are watching this election very, very closely because it has extremely important consequences for different regions in the world, including the Middle East. We could spend a lot of time talking about the difference between Harris's and Trump's views on the Middle East and what that could mean. But I think from the Israeli perspective, I should say from Benjamin Netanyahu's perspective, he would prefer Trump as president because he would not expect Trump to pressure him into a ceasefire. He is getting a lot of pressure from the Biden administration to arrive at a ceasefire with Hamas. If Trump comes into office, I think that pressure will dissipate a great bit. If you want to talk about what Trump would do in terms of sending forces into Gaza, I think he'd be much more reluctant than Harris would as well. So it could have some real implications for the war.
Carl, great insight, my friend. Always appreciate the time. I'll stay in contact with you. And, of course, this election is going to have huge outcomes of what you study and teach there at the University of Akron. Thanks for the time this morning.
Thanks for having me, Ray. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.